Scully, who passed away just recently. And within the last year and a half, he wrote a book, Behind the Flying Saucers. That's the title of it, first book to ever come out that alerted the world that they were landing. In this book, it tells you plain that 16 men died in each ship, making a total of 32. The wrecks of the ships are today at Wright Field 8 in Ohio. The bodies of these men were taken there also. They were short men because the ships were shallow. They couldn't take a 6-foot man in it. So they had 4 and 4.5 foot men in there, 16 in each one of them. They crashed because this is the way they operate. They are electric machines, electromagnetic. They use the same power that our Earth is propelled by, or the same power that you call a lightning. That's electrical power, don't forget. They use that power, they know how to harness it, and they use that for propulsion instead of gasoline and polluting the air with it, like we do, called smog. So here, the magnetic pull toward the Earth, which we call gravity, is strong, and they have to then change polarities, see? For positive against positive, and the Earth being positive, they throw a positive in, sufficient enough to slow it up, because the positive is repelling, but negatively they pull it forward. And this apparatus went wrong on those two ships, and they crashed. They improved up on their ship since then because they had not any crashes since then. But anyhow, then that come out. So we begin to look into it deeper and deeper. And before I go away from this point, might as well tell you then that the bodies, nobody knew where they were taken except that the military had them. But it was months after that, after Frank Scully's book came out, that I was called, Frank Scully was called, a number of us was called, and I took my secretary and another lady with me. I asked if it could be done, and they said yes. This was close to the public. It's never been published what transpired at the meeting. Well, all kinds of things took place there, and the military big shots were there, so was the news media, and also the Secret Service and all of that that kept things silent. No publication on the meeting. Well, in that meeting, a letter was read. That's the first time we found out what happened to those bodies. The letter was read from Rockefeller Institute. That's where they were taken, dissected in every way to find out if the structure was anything like ours, and it was. And it even stated where priests had the last rites over these bodies when they were put away, finally, for the final. And if you remember correctly, Colonel Spellman and Colonel McIntyre in Los Angeles was asked, because I don't know how the name leaked out, somebody had to give out because that name supposed to have been kept confidential, and the priestess had said less rights, but somebody took that name, mentioned that name someplace regarding the bodies, and these men, cardinals, called the priest down for that. It was John Pope that's finally passed the law, or instructions, before he passed away, Pope John, that now a priest can say the last rites over any human body, regardless where they come from, if they ask for it. There were a lot of squawk about it at the time. So we found out for the first time then where those bodies were and what happened to them, and they were buried the proper way. So things like that have been going on quite a while, all kinds of things. And so there have been a lot of things gone by already that I could stand here for 2 days telling you about incident by incident that took place, that actual records do exist of those incidents, even to the case where people have been taken out of this planet, to other planet, and so on and so forth, which is the choice shouldn't be a mystery either, because Jesus himself said, heaven and earth, man, remember now, follow me up. Like states, heaven, he mentions heaven first in each case. Heaven and earth shall pass away, but my word shall go on forever. Now there must be something greater than heaven and earth for his word to go on forever. He also tells you that a new heaven and a new earth shall take its place. In other words, bodies, whether it be planets or human, or any other forms, are coming and going. Rebirth is constant. There's no stopping anywhere. Activity goes on forever. And so, you might say, people from this world has been taken. The pilots and so on been reported missing, either in flight or something like that, but they're reported missing and have not been returned. And although there have been some that did come back again, but silence on that altogether. We don't even know what they've learned. So in year of 52, on November the 20th, I had anthropologists, two of them would be, from University of Arizona. I've been going out the desert right long with a hope of getting good pictures of the ships themselves. And on this day, just about 30 miles this side of Blight, and Blight is near the Colorado River, which separates and puts the boundary of Arizona and California. And there's an old airport out there they used during the war, and an old dry lake. Now it's demolished. It's recently been demolished, the buildings and all. It's clear land now. And we went up there. The road leads to Parker Dam, Indian Reservation. We took that road 10 miles from the turnoff at Desert Center. We went up there to an incline of a highway and down again. And we stopped at the point on the incline. We saw the ship, big ship down there, mothership, no wings, the big marking of an orange color on its back. We had my telescope, as I always went with the telescope, and had eight plates loaded, ready for shooting. You know, I had to put the camera on, and when you use a telescope, you don't use the optics of the camera. You take them out, you use the shutter, use the optics of the telescope to photograph. So we set it up, and then these big ships are carriers, just like we have flat tops carrying our planes at sea. They are carriers. We didn't know that up till then. So one of those flying saucers, or they are called, circle ones, like he showed you on the picture, and there's a picture of them, came out of it, but we didn't see when. We were setting up the telescope. And then finally it come in, and the big mountains there, and quite an open desert too, and washes. And so, because when it rains in the desert, it pours, floods it, regular cloudbursts, see? So there's quite a few washes. So this thing started running around, so eight plates don't take long to shoot, and you don't know how long you're gonna stay in a view for you to shoot. You can't hardly take the time to actually focus proper. You're just taking a chance that you might get them. Well, then when it vanished in between the mountains, didn't see it go up, it vanished between the mountains, so we couldn't see it. And we dismantled this telescope, put it back in the car. And Miss Wells is an artist, very good artist. She sketched this man. There was a man out there waving to us. So I says, okay, go ahead, walk him with the work. I'll walk up to him and see what he wants. I started walking up to him, and I was cautious, in a way, although it's nothing new, because a lot of people go out in the California desert in the mountains to look for precious stones. And I thought that might be one of them. And the closer I got to him, the more I realized that it couldn't be what we call a rock hound, see, up there. Because it's a very, very delicate person, and feeling that you, of caution that you would have, seemed to fall away from you, just like that. And he walked up there without any fear to him. Well, he had long hair about this, hanging to his shoulders, and then more of a feature that might be crossed between man and woman. See? That delicate features. And he had one suit there with a big white belt in his belt. Looked like it was one piece. And I reported it as one piece. Later I found out it was two-piece suit with and a sash, which is the belt. Why, covered up the that part. So, I tried to talk to him. Well, he seemed to understand what I was saying, but I wasn't getting any answer from him. I want to know who he was and all of that. Then I suddenly felt that he was not of this world. And I took a chance on that, really took a chance, asking him. And I finally pointed, it was noon. Sun was zenith. And I pointed to the sun. And then made one orbit, and it said Mercury. And I made a second orbit, and it said Venus. And I made a third orbit, and said Earth. I repeated it. Then he finally did the same thing. Pointed to the sun, made one orbit, and a second orbit, and stopped at the second orbit and pointed to himself. And I said, Venus? He nodded and said, yes. That's how we found out where he was from. Still, I didn't know how he got out of the ship, or where he come from. And the wind was blowing there, opened territory. It must have caught the flange of the ship, the wind did, and swayed it a little bit where it was hiding in the cove. And a flash of light beam went out like that, and the spark got caught it in the corner of my eye, and I kept looking, and finally I saw just a portion of it sticking out there. I said, and I looked around, so I thought there was more of it back there. So I said, is that your ship? He nodded and said, yes. He said, he understood me. And I said, let's go over there. So just then, when he moved over, looked in the sand, and they left funny markings, hieroglyphics, very funny markings. And I was careful afterwards to not have them distorted. And this anthropologist finally took plaster casts of these markings. They were published. But anyway, so we walked over about 75 to 100 feet from where we stood in the first place where we met, too. And Mrs. Wells, being a good artist, she sketched a man right there, a piece of paper, and since then we've painted the picture of him altogether by an artist, just the color of the clothes and hair and all. But she made a good sketch of it, about 99% correct. And so we walked over there, and I'm going to turn these saucers up a little bit. They were made of plastic here for a banquet last night in Rochester. Well, anyway, this is the flange, we say. Well, he told me to stay away from the flange when he got to the ship. The ship was hovering about 10, 15 feet off the ground. And there was another person in there, but I never got to see him. And you know, you forget yourself, you get all excited, you got 1,001 questions on your mind that you want to ask, and the guy is not answering them. And all of that, you try to convey it one way or the other, and you're just wondering then. So, moving around back and forth, I come up with under the flange about my shoulder like that. And immediately, the arm was caught, hit up against the flange just like that, and retracted back again, the position, kicked back. Well, it hurt. And he made me believe, through gestures, that it'll be all right. Well, it's all right, but once in a while, about once or twice a year, goes limp like that. But not for long, for about 5 seconds, and it's okay again. But anyway, so I talked to him. At that time, when he heard a sound he'd give out, he'd tell me about the atomic bomb. He said, boom, boom, it's going to be bad. Jim gestures. Well, since then, we have what we call it, an Allen belt, see, the radiation belt. It had been developed, put up there by man. All right? And he says, if we could do more, we'll have some more trouble. Well, if you remember now, just not quite 2 years ago, on Christmas Island and Johnson Island, we tried to shoot a warhead out on a missile to 2,000-foot height, which would be beyond our ionosphere, almost, or within it. Well, no luck. The shots, a couple of them, went wrong, and one of them exploded on ramp. How many people got hurt, we've never been told. And finally, we did succeed in getting one out 200 miles. Because there are 2,000. 200 miles. And at 200 miles, we established another radiation belt, which is a more dangerous one than the Van Allen belt. So they told us the truth. But we paid no heed, did take no heed. And today we may be bothered with them, even ourselves eventually, if that those radiation belts should lower. And had they succeeded or had been allowed to shoot a shot 2,000 miles, the chances are they would have broke through the ionosphere. The ionosphere is a screen-like, like you would have on your window to keep your flies out. And it filters out the gamma ray from the sun. From the sun as they come through. It's a filter system. And if we ever break that through and shatter it to pieces, all those deadly rays will be coming right on us. You see, man is crazy sometimes. You know, it's a funny thing sometimes when you talk about man. He's a